Welcome to Buddhism in a Nutshell. Tonight is the first class in a series of five classes. And I'm going to have you turn your cell phones off if anybody's got them on right now. Just put them on vibrate or something. I'd say that mostly for myself. I already did mine. And my name is Sandy Carlson. I'm going to be leading the class tonight. And it's probably been about a year since I've led this, so it may take me a while to get back into the swing of things here and remember some of the details that we're going to go through. So I'm going to refer to my book quite a bit just so I can make sure I stay on track. I am one of those instructors that can get way off on stories. Okay, so I'm going to try to keep things focused for us so that you actually take something away from the class. And before we get started with anything, I want to ask a couple of questions. First, how many people is it the first time you've ever been here? First time you've ever stepped foot in Kanapa Center? Okay. So everybody else has been here, like, say, more than five times? Okay, so still somewhat new. It just helps me to kind of get a grip on some things. Has anybody taken this class before? Okay. Chris, I'm going to be calling on you a lot. All right. And one of the things that's going to, where did the second mic go? Yeah, that one. I'm going to have you, let's say a few of the things that would be beneficial here for people. Some of you heard this already, but we actually record these classes, and it's for the benefit of each other. If we want access to them, to hear them. If we miss a class, we'll be able to follow along, catch up. And then other people who are trying to learn. We put these classes up on our website. They're not open to the general public. You have to be a member in order to access these, so it's not out in the general public. And it's only the audio. It's not the visuals or anything like that. So it's very helpful when we talk or when we ask questions if you all use the mic too. And one of the things we're going to do is we're going to practice right off the bat. And I'm going to have each of you just take the mic. We push the button so we make sure that there's a green light because we're going to be using this throughout the course, okay? If you have questions or if you want to make a comment, I'm going to have you use the mic. And we're going to start right now because what I'm going to have you do is just give a brief introduction of yourself, tell us your name, where you're from, and maybe just a tad, very brief bit of your interest and why you're here tonight and your experience with Buddhism at all, okay? So just your name, where you're from, and just so I can kind of gauge where everybody is at, and it also helps because you'll find as you go through this course that you kind of become friends and you become more comfortable if we know each other. Okay. It should be already gone. There you go. Yep.
Okay. My name's John Keener. I'm originally from Ohio. Been in North Carolina since August of last year.
Okay.
It's fairly new.
And your experience with Buddhism?
A
little bit?
Mostly read about it and met the monks when they came in for the Sam Mandala in Raleigh.
Okay. So just a little bit of interest in finding out more.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Okay. Let's just go ahead and just start passing around.
Hi, my name is James. I'm originally from a town on the eastern shore of Maryland called Salisbury. Back there, I was part of a sangha that met once every Monday, and we were consistently bringing books in to read. I've been through a couple Jack Kornfields, Pema Chodron's, and of course a few Thich Nhat Hanh's. And so once I moved here, I've started coming here, which was about last August when I finally moved here.
Okay, well, welcome. I know I've seen you. Okay, just go ahead and...
I'm Steve Hale. I'm from Cary. Read a lot of Buddhist texts, and I've read enough to know that I need a teacher in a community, so
okay.
I'm here for that.
Okay. First time?
Yes.
Okay. I'm not going to remember anybody's names. Let's just get that clear right now, but I will try.
I'm Marion Hale from Cary also.
Come on in.
And I've been here for the Meditation 101 class. And a couple of other things.
Okay.
And so it's to seek out more information.
Okay. David Maclis, did you go to his class? Or who do you remember who your teacher was for the meditation? Karen or?
I think it was David.
Doesn't matter. I'm just curious.
Call and dark brown hair, thinnish, medium.
Might have been, or white. And I just get curious because we all use some of the same techniques, and so you'll get a little bit of a repeat, okay? That's not a bad thing.
Hi. I'm Michelle. I'm from Garner, and just brand new to this, so okay. I just want to find out a little bit more and learn about it.
Okay. Yep. Perfect.
My name's Jason. Live in Garner with Michelle, and I'm here to support
her. She dragged you up, right?
No, actually.
Okay. Oh, okay. Perfect. Yeah, sometimes people will always come in herds, and then you'll relax when you discover that it's all good.
Mike, I'm from South Hill, Virginia. I live in Raleigh. I'm just coming to see what's going on here.
Still curious. Okay.
I'm Megan, and I live in Carrboro, and I'm okay. here with Mike. And I'm here to learn whatever I can.
Just checking it out. Okay.
My name is Samara. I live in Raleigh, and I'm originally from New Orleans. But I've been dabbling off and on my own for the past 20 years.
Okay.
Just doing a lot of reading. But I actually, my first visit was in your previous location before you moved here.
Okay.
Like years and years ago. Yeah.
Yeah. So you probably met Chris. Because Chris has been here since back in that time, too.
I may have.
And that was a very small group.
Yeah.
So you probably have seen each other and just don't even know it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Bradley. I'm from here in Raleigh. I was actually born here and lived here my entire life.
No, there's like 10 of you that I've ever met.
I know. I hear that a lot.
So hi.
And I've basically been reading on basic Buddhist concepts since I took a course in college a few years ago.
Okay.
And also I've started meditation, so I'm just here to kind of deepen my understanding.
Okay.
That's right.
Perfect.
My name's John. I've actually come here several times, but not more than six probably.
Okay.
So when you said five, I was like,
Oh, that's my cutoff.
Very
yeah,
close.
That's it.
Then
you're
have,
quickly going to become not a newcomer, you see.
Hopefully, yeah. That's I've been interested in New Age spirituality for the past couple of years.
Okay.
And I've decided I want to kind of step it up into something that has some structure.
Okay.
So that's why I'm here.
Okay. Makes sense.
And I'm from Raleigh.
Okay.
I live here. I was not born here, though. So
okay.
Not one of the 10.
Hi. My name is Amar, and I'm from Toronto. But, yeah, I've just been dabbling in Buddhism and that sort of thing, so I want to learn some more, really, yeah.
Checking it out, okay.
Hello, my name is Darshna. I've been living the Buddhist life and never actually studied it. Amar is my son.
Okay.
And we lived in Southeast Asia for many years, so it'd be interesting to find out how things are here.
Okay.
And we come on Sundays with the family.
So you've had a chance to listen and learn from Geshe-la?
Yes.
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 All right.
It's very good even for our little four-year-old.
Yeah. He's phenomenal. Yeah.
My name is Sun. I live in Garner. Originally, I'm from Vietnam. I've been a Buddhist all my life, actually. It's just that I haven't really practiced it. I'm just here to learn more. I'm trying to practice.
My name is Jim. I'm from Garner, and I've been reading on Buddhism for probably about a year now, and I'm a devout listener of Ajahn Brahm. So just here to find out more.
Hello. My name is Elizabeth. I'm originally from Poland. I live here. Been already around 10 years, and I just came here to learn some more.
Okay.
Hello, my name is Todd. I live here in Raleigh and have lived here in Raleigh for quite some time. I've had an interest in Buddhism for a number of years and have practiced meditation throughout those years, but have never taken any serious course to enlighten myself a little further.
Okay.
My name is David. I come from Goldsboro. I'm from South America. And I've been coming here for a couple of years. I just want to learn some more.
Well, David has actually been coming for quite a few years and comes to quite a few classes. So one of the reasons that I go around the room is I start to think, who am I going to call on if I get stuck on an answer or if I just fall into it? And David, guess what? You're going to be one of those people. So are you, young man. All right. Again, my name is Sandy Carlson, and I have been studying Buddhism on my own for many, many, many years. My father was in the military. He was Air Force, and so we traveled the world. And he was actually Lutheran, and my mother was Catholic. And back in the day, they weren't even allowed to get married, so they eloped. And I was very fortunate that they opened the whole world to us, and they had us study all of the different faiths and all of the different cultures. And so they basically just wanted us to have a faith in something, and they allowed all of us to study what we were drawn to. My sister is Lutheran, my brother's Catholic, and I'm Buddhist. There you go. So, and it works. My husband is actually Christian-based as well. And for us, it works very well because, again, for us, it's actually more about a way of life. And so it absolutely can work, and I'm one of the fortunate ones that's able to have that type of life and that type of support. Now, I have not taught this class for a long time. I've told you that, so we're going to kind of catch up on some things together. I do have a teaching degree, but I haven't taught formally in a long time. This is about the only time I get to do that now. I actually work in television and marketing with my husband in our own company. I have finished... I started probably dabbling, like many of you say, many, many years ago, even as a child. And then 4 years ago when I moved here is when I actually got really serious and I found my teachers, and that's when I really started studying in depth Tibetan Buddhism. And I feel like it has made light years of understanding for me. There's only so much that you can really do out of a book until you find a teacher that can really explain things and put things in context for you and stuff. So I found that here with Geshe Gelug Choda and all of the phenomenal teachers that we have here. We have a 2-year Discovering Buddhism course, which I've taken. Let me kind of explain Kadampa Center a little bit so that you're kind of comfortable with where you have come. I think I explained about the logistics of the center. We've got restrooms right around the corner. Feel free, you know, if you need to go there in class, go. There's water and hot water for tea out there. Help yourself to that. There are some, like, to-go cups out there, some styrofoam cups. But you're also free to go in the kitchen because we have mugs and things. But we are mostly a volunteer organization, so if you tend to want to use a mug, and you can bring it in here. It's okay. But this is going to be a very casual class, okay? Help yourself. But if you use a mug, I'm going to ask you to go ahead and wash it and clean it because we're mostly volunteers here, and I'd rather not be doing a bunch of dishes at the end of the night. So it's just get, you know, let's be comfortable. Parking, I don't think it's going to be a problem. Sometimes this class or any of our classes can actually get quite busy, so sometimes it can be a little challenging. But obviously, I don't think we need to worry about that now. We are going to be meeting for 5 Tuesday nights from now until July 8th. Once that 4th of July week comes, I might talk to you and make sure that we're okay. The 4th of July is on Friday, so class would be, what, the 1st or the 2nd, so just to make sure people aren't going to be out of town if we wanted to postpone it, but we'll see how that goes that week. You are more than welcome to come in and out of these classes as you choose. It's most beneficial if you kind of try to come for all 5 sessions, but if you have to miss something, don't worry about, you know, stepping back in. Like I said, this is a very casual class. Everybody asks about recommended books. We do have a book. It's Buddhism in a Nutshell, and it was written by Lama Yeshe, Lama Zopa Rinpoche, and Venerable Amy Miller. It's a very good, very basic text. We're going to cover a lot of this in class, but there's a lot of information in this book that I'm not going to have time to cover. We really have, what, an hour and a half, you know, 5 times, whereas this has, you know, a book where they can go into a little bit more depth. There's also an audio CD in this book where she will have some meditations as well as some of the course material. So it's a very good basic book. It's $25 and is available out in our bookstore. There's other books that are really good. People always ask me, so let's just kind of deal with that right now. Buddhism for Dummies is a very good book, basic information. We've got a lot of those types of books. And my all-time favorite book, because people ask me that one, is The Art of Happiness by His Holiness. So we'll just deal with books right now. If you have questions later, of course I'll help. And, of course, that there's things we're in a little bit of disarray because of the Light of the Path retreat we just returned from. But our bookstore and our retail store is going to be unpacking and setting things up sometime over the next couple of weeks as we kind of get back into real life. There are recommended books for this class, but we don't have any tests. There will not be any tests. There's not any quizzes. There's not any have-to-dos. This is more just informational sharing. Okay, so don't worry about that. We will have some handouts, and they are all available online. We're going to be doing a little bit of very basic meditations and have some basic information like on the Four Noble Truths and a couple of things like that. So the handouts right now, they're already up online for you if you'd like to go ahead and download them all right now and read ahead if you'd like to. It's kadampacenter.org, and if you go under Spiritual Programs and then find Buddhism in a Nutshell, they're at the bottom of that page. Okay, so again, our website, kadampa-center.org, Spiritual Programs, Buddhism in a Nutshell, and then just scroll down to the bottom and all of the handouts. I think that there's like 7 or 8 of them are up already. Okay? So help yourself to those. Right now what I'd like to do is I'd like to just start with an introduction to meditation. How many people have meditated before? Okay, let me ask it this way. How many people have never meditated before? Okay. So I have one. The meditation that we do here at the center, we're going to focus on Tibetan Buddhist meditation. And there's actually two kinds. We'll get into this in a lot more details. But what I'd like you to kind of do is just be a little bit open-minded, because the meditation that you've done before may be a little bit different. The meditation style and the way that you actually do things and the way that you work through things may be a little bit different from what we're going to do here at the center. So I'd like to have you try to be a little bit open-minded. Try the meditation the way that I'm going to explain it. See if it works for you. Give it a few tries before you make a decision. And then just see if this is working along with your other meditation practice or instead of. It's completely up to you. Meditation, and especially from a Tibetan Buddhist perspective, is really about checking out what's going to work for you. So I'm going to kind of walk you through just kind of a practice meditation. We're just going to start just to kind of get you introduced to it. Okay? So the first thing that we do is in Tibetan Buddhist meditation, we actually have a posture, okay, that helps. I'm going to walk you through this posture, whether you're sitting on the mat, you're sitting in a chair. You can pretty much do this any place. It is a 7-point meditation posture. And the reason for this posture is that this is a way to hold your body that is sustainable. Okay, there's nothing holy about this. There's nothing woo-woo. It's nothing like that. It's a way that your body can hold itself. It can be comfortable and it can be sustained for long periods of time. Okay, and these are this basically comes down from the Tibetan Buddhist meditators that have been meditating for 3,000 years. So they pretty much kind of have the lock on how this is done, and they've figured it out. So give it a try. But let's kind of walk through the 7-point meditation posture. And number one is the legs. If possible, if you're sitting on the ground, you can sit in the Vajra or full lotus position. And a lot of people can do it, and a lot of people can't. I meditate in a chair. I've got a bum knee, so I don't worry about it. So if you're sitting in a chair, sit a little bit forward in your chair. You don't want to be slumped back, so sit a little bit forward and have your feet firmly on the ground. You'll see a lot of times people will put their feet on a mat if you can't touch the ground, but just kind of keep your legs firm. Arms, hold your hands loosely in your lap. In our tradition, we take the right hand and gently place it on the left, okay? And we just place them in our lap with the arms just a little bit out a little bit. This allows air to circulate. And, I could probably do this better if I don't try to read it, because I do it differently. But we'll go through the reading. Okay, so the arms, and we just kind of hold them out so it allows air to go there. The back is really important. You want it to be straight, not totally stiff, not very rigid, but you want it to be straight so that you're allowing the circulation to go. And you want your arms and your shoulders to be a little bit back, kind of, I would say, maybe a regal position. And what does that do? That opens up the lungs, okay? So you're just kind of opening it up and a little bit straight, arms are back, hands are in your lap, your feet are flat on the ground. And your jaw and your mouth are loose. Your mouth is closed. Your tongue is like right up behind the back of your teeth, okay? It's touching the roof of your mouth and the back of your teeth. Why? This helps with the saliva. Okay, so again, there's a reason for everything that we're doing here. So you don't want your jaw to be clenched. Just have it slightly, you know, slightly together, slightly apart. Okay, and have your head should be angled just a little bit down. And the way that I kind of try to think about this is that if there was a string at the crown of my head and I pulled it, it would just elongate. So that we keep my eyes down, that my neck is long, my shoulders are back, and it just kind of pulls a little bit, and that gives you a nice straight posture. We have the eyes. Many people find that meditating with your eyes closed is very much easier than with your eyes open. You just kind of have to be careful of not falling to sleep or getting a little bit too comfortable because we're meditating and we're not dozing. That's, again, one of my issues. So the things that you work on. Some people keep your eyes slightly open and just a little bit in front of you, maybe 4 or 5 feet in front of you on the floor, but not really directly looking at anything. Okay. So, again, this is just kind of an introduction. So think of these 7 points again. Your legs, your arms, your back, your eyes, your jaw and mouth, your tongue, and your head. So slowly just run your mind down your body. Scan your body and see if you're noticing any issues or comfort problems. And the first thing I want you to do is take 3 deep breaths. And you want your stomach and lungs to expand. Now allow your breathing to return to its normal pattern. We begin every meditation by setting our motivation. That's the reason that we're doing this. Okay, so think about that. Why are you doing this? Why, out of all the things that you could be doing right now, are you sitting on a cushion or in a chair at Kadapa Center with your eyes closed? Whatever reason prompted you to do this, that's great. For whatever reason you are here, that's fine. If you're here out of curiosity, that's great. If you're here to see if it quiets your mind and maybe helps relieve some stress, that's also good. If you're here because you want to be a kinder, gentler person, that's wonderful. But it's said that the best motivation, the very most powerful one, is that if we can think even something just as simple as this, sitting quietly for a couple of minutes is being done by me so that I can benefit all living beings. That probably sounds really ridiculous right now. But just try to think that way just for a minute, even if you kind of have to force it out, and if it sounds just uncomfortable or silly or not real, just think about it just for a minute. You're sitting here so that you can benefit all living beings. It is said that will make an imprint on our mind, that because of the laws of karma, it will inevitably ripen in a positive manner, in a positive way in the future. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. It will be a positive benefit to you in the future. All right. This is a Mahayana, what's called a Mahayana, or a great motivation. Okay, so I just want you to just sit and think about that for just a minute. Now we've set our motivation. Okay, now we're going to start the actual meditation. And we're going to do a very, very simple, but not easy, concentration meditation. All we're going to do is pay attention to our breath. The movement of our breath in and out through our nostrils. Place your awareness on that. Nothing more, nothing less. Your mind perceives your breath. You can almost say that the mind and the breath are one. Okay, don't describe it. Don't count the breath. Just directly experience your breath. Every time you notice that you're experiencing something else, every time you find yourself thinking of something else, gently bring it back to the breath. Breathing in, breathing out, over and over. If you find yourself thinking about what you did all day today, bring it back to the breath. You find yourself thinking about what you need to do after class, bring your mind back to your breath. Over and over and over. Your mind is becoming familiar with the experience of the breath. That's the meditation. Just keep coming back to your breath. We're going to end our meditation with what we call a dedication. Okay, mentally give yourself a little pat on the back. Okay, we acknowledge that we've done something that might be a little out of the ordinary for us. Okay, we reaffirm that our motivation, that just this simple meditation, may it make on our mind stream an impression that will ripen in a way that benefits all living beings. So just think that way for just a minute. Okay, relax and bring your attention back to the room. Okay, Tibetan Buddhism meditation. There are two kinds of meditation. There's concentration meditation, which is really what we just did. We're concentrating, we're focusing on one thing. And then there's analytical meditation, where we look at a concept and we try to work our way through it until we understand it and understand how our mind will work with it. Okay? So that's the basis. That is the basis for Tibetan Buddha meditation in the Tibetan Buddhist world. Okay? It is not about zoning out or trying to think of nothing, because from a Buddhist perspective, that isn't even really possible. Okay? Your mind needs to be on something. It is not possible to think of nothing. The concentration meditation, what we're doing is we're working with the mind, you're strengthening the mind to be able to concentrate on something so that when we work on analytical concepts, we're able to do it. It's kind of like going to the gym. You go to the gym, you work out so you can go and do these sports. Okay, so concentration is that. It's working with the mind, strengthening the mind so you can actually work with the mind. Okay, so from a Buddhist perspective, it's actually almost impossible to think of nothing. And from a Buddhist perspective, it's actually impossible to multitask. Okay, your mind will really only concentrate on one thing at a time. And we have to work with it to do that. Okay, we use the breath this time. Basically, that is a neutral object to work with, and it's with us all the time. So we have a lot of different breathing exercises, and that's one that we'll do a couple of different ones, and you can kind of check out and find out which one may work for you better. I find that there are some that work really well for me and some that don't. So we'll give you a couple of options to try some different things. And from a Buddhist perspective, we want to find positive things to meditate on. Okay? You don't want to be meditating on negative aspects. Okay? So that's part of you. Because meditation is letting your mind become familiar with something. That's the actual definition of meditation from a Buddhist perspective, is your mind becoming familiar with. Okay? So we're going to practice some of those things. And you're not going to become enlightened by concentrating on your breath, okay? But it's going to help us to develop the tool to work with our mind, okay? So this is all about practice. The analytic meditation, that's where we actually will think about what we're meditating on, analyzing it, arguing with it, challenging your mind, really trying to think it all the way through so that you understand it. And those little awarenesses that you get when you kind of own it, that those are those mini enlightenments that will help you along the path. Okay? Are there any questions right now? I mean, this is just basic meditation. This is basic, very simple, you know, a couple of thoughts on meditation. But I just want to make sure if there's any questions right now, because I know some people may have used other techniques and stuff, and I just want to have you open to this one a little bit. Okay, so let's talk about what we're going to do for the rest of this class and what we're going to be talking about for the next 5 weeks. Okay? So, literally, the purpose and kind of content for this course is that it is really a basic introduction and overview of the Buddhist principles. We do not assume that anybody here in this class wants to convert. We don't assume that anybody really wants anything more than just to answer some questions and get some basic information. All right? This is open to everybody. We have people of all faiths, all cultures, all ages. Everything come. This class has been as small as 5, and, as you know, sometimes it's the room is full. So I like the smaller classes because then we just get a little bit more time to talk. So let's talk about the Kadampa Center real quick. Several of you have been here for a while, so it's going to be a little bit of a review. You can zone out if you choose to. The Kadampa Center is a Tibetan Buddhist center in the tradition of His Holiness the Dalai Lama. All right, we have been in existence for probably 20-something years, and it started in the living room of a couple of our members, and it has grown to this beautiful community of over 700, probably close to 1,000 people are part of our center now. We are almost entirely volunteer-run. Our resident instructor is Geshe Gelug Choda. Some of you have had the opportunity to meet him already. He is a Tibetan monk from India, and he speaks fluent English. So we're just so, so fortunate to have Geshe-la here. You'll hear that term, Geshe-la. Geshe Gelug Choda. Gelug Choda is his name. Geshe is his title. And a Geshe is somebody who has done like 12 to 30 or 40 years of study on Buddhism. Okay? And our Geshe-la is not only a Geshe, he's a Lorampa Geshe, which is kind of like summa cum laude. Okay, so it's almost like doctor or PhD. He is phenomenal, and he is very, very advanced. And he is the most humble man. If you've had a chance to meet him, you wouldn't even know how really advanced he is in the studies. And then we call him Geshe-la. You'll hear us say the word La at the end. You could even say Sandy-la, Christopher-la. The La is a form of respectful endearment. So we call him Geshe-la. We also have Geshe Paldam Tsongpo is his attendant, and he is also a Geshe. So we're very fortunate we have two Geshes right here at Kadampa Center. There are some centers that don't have any Sangha, any main teachers. Okay, so we have two Geshes. We also have, at any given time, we have 2 to 4 Buddhist nuns, Western Buddhist nuns. We've had several of our members have ordained. And so they're phenomenal because they can help to put things in context. While Geshe-la speaks fluent English, he wasn't raised here. So sometimes we're asking questions. You know, we've got a lot of parents here, so they'll ask questions about how to work with, you know, their children with some of these, you know, Nintendo or PlayStation games, and Geshe-la has no clue what we're talking about. And so the nuns sometimes can help to put things a little bit in context as we try to work through some of these things. Kanapa Center has, like I said, we have probably close to 1,000 total members now. Probably 300 or 400 come quite regularly. 600 or so depends on what's going on at the center, and then we have a worldwide presence online now. As our website is becoming more robust, so that's growing. The FPMT is our parent organization, the foundation for the preservation of the Mahayana tradition. All right. It's a big mouthful, and that is a worldwide organization of about 170 centers all over the world that follow in the lineage of His Holiness. And the FPMT was started by two monks back in the day. Lama Yeshe, I don't know if you can see past this thing, Lama Yeshe and Lama Zopa Rinpoche and on the other side of His Holiness the Dalai Lama, back in the day, all right, when all of the hippies were going over to Tibet and Nepal to meet the Dalai Lama, all of these movies that we all saw, Lama Zopa Rinpoche and Lama Yeshe decided that if all of these Westerners are coming over here to learn this, we maybe should take the Dharma to them. Okay, so they came over back in the 50s, 60s, came over and started teaching Westerners about Buddhism. And it just has grown into 170-odd centers everywhere from Italy, France, California, Germany, I mean, all over the world, Mongolia. There are FPMT centers worldwide. And we are probably, Kadampa Center is one of the largest. We're also one of the fastest growing. We have a phenomenal children's program. We've got a lot going on here. We're just fortunate. Raleigh is actually one of the top 10 cities in the United States for Buddhism. I just saw that article, you know, a couple of months ago. That was, you know, fun to see. There are a lot of different Buddhist centers here in Raleigh and a lot of different styles of Buddhism. We're going to talk about that a little bit later. We're in the Galupa tradition, which is the direct tradition of His Holiness the Dalai Lama. That's just kind of the basics, okay? We have this Buddhism in a Nutshell class. We have two teachings on Sundays. They're basically the same, you know, Geshe-la will cover the same thing on Sundays in each of the classes. We've got a 9 o'clock session and a 10:45 session, and we had to split and go to two sessions because we just didn't have room in the Gompa. That's when we're in a growth problem, nice problem. So we have two sessions. The 9 o'clock session is a little bit quieter and a little bit smaller because the second session is the one that all the families come to with the children and stuff. So it's basically the same thing. If anybody has any kids, you can ask me about it afterwards and I can explain some of those things. Our children's program does the teachings and they work with the 16 guidelines. So they basically take some of the Buddhist, you know, overviews off of it, but it's still working with compassion and wisdom and love and honesty and, you know, ethics, all of those types of things. We also have a Meditation 101 class, okay, and that's a 5-week course that alternates with this. So Buddhism in a Nutshell will go for 5 weeks, and then maybe there'll be a little bit of a break, and then Meditation 101 will go. And these are the beginning courses. On Monday nights, we have a more advanced class, Discovering Buddhism. That is 14 modules that take place over 2 years, okay, and these modules last for about 6 weeks each, and there'll be one module on karma alone. So you spend 6 weeks just on karma. Then you'll spend another 6 weeks on the spiritual teacher. Then you can spend another 6 weeks on tantra. You'll spend another 6 weeks on mind and its potential. So that's where they dive a little bit deeper, okay? We're going to have 5 weeks, and we're going to skip along the top, okay? Like, karma is going to take, like, 15 minutes for us, maybe 20. There, they can go much deeper. So, and the reason I'm explaining this is that if we're going to try to keep this very beginner level, and I think many of you might might be past that and find this a little bit boring. But this is just a feeder class and a little bit of a teaser class for some of those additional courses. So the Discovering Buddhism class right now, it's in the 13th module, the Tantra. So within a month, that's going to be starting a new round. So you guys probably couldn't be in a better place right now if you're interested in furthering, finding out more, because we're going to finish this 13th module. And the 14th module for Discovering Buddhism is called Special Integration, and that's one that you kind of do on your own. It's like home study. You go on retreats, you do different practices. So they're literally going to be starting a new round of Discovering Buddhism the next month or so. So your timing is really good if you're interested in that. Wednesday nights, we have a Lam Rim course that's taught by Geshe-la. And that's going specifically through some of the texts. And we're going to get into exactly what the Lam Rim is here, because it's really the graduated path to enlightenment. There is a step-by-step book that we follow, that if we practice it and we do these things, this is the path to enlightenment. Okay? This is part of what Tibetan Buddhism is all about. It's a very scholarly, you know, there is a path. And we're going to talk about that a little bit. But on Wednesday nights, we're going through that. We're going to be starting another more advanced class on Friday nights pretty soon. And I'm going to say this because there's a couple of people in here that might be interested in that. And that's going to be called, it's called the Basic Program. It's not basic. It's a little bit more advanced, and you need to have done a little bit higher level of study. You're always welcome to try to come to anything. We don't have prerequisites unless we say that you have a certain requirement to be there, so you're more than welcome to come and check it out. That's what Buddhism is all about, coming and check it out. It's kind of like walking into a supermarket. You're going to have all these things, all right, cherry pick through and see what's going to work for you and what you're interested in, and then go there. Okay? You're going to hear a lot of things in both this class and perhaps some of the other things are on Sundays and different classes that you go to that maybe you're either not going to understand or you're not too sure about. And what I want to recommend for that is that just take that when we start talking about rebirth. There's some of these things you're just not going to be sure about. You know, just take it, listen to it, stick it up on a shelf, you know, and leave it there. Okay? We're not going to do a lot of deep diving here. But later, you might hear something, or when you're listening with Geshe-la talking or some of the teachings and stuff, that things will maybe start to make a little bit more sense. I've had a mental bookshelf for like 10 years, and I still have some things up there. But many of the things that I didn't understand or didn't really, I'm not too sure about that. You know, as I've been studying, it's like, oh, that's what that means. And so I have these mini enlightenments all the time now that I'm working with Geshe-la and some of these other phenomenal teachers here. We do have phenomenal teachers here at the Kanapa Center. We've got students that have been studying for, you know, 15, 20 years that are leading some of these courses. I'm not one of them. Okay, I'm just interested in some of the basics. If I don't know the answers, I know who does. I'm Ian Vanna White. Okay, I'm really good at pointing. I am very interested in some of these basics, and I'm working on many things on my own. And I really like to work with newcomers, because sometimes, you know, people are just tentative and not comfortable. And, you know, it's just I want to create an atmosphere where you do feel comfortable and you will start asking, because that's how we start learning. Okay? No question is dumb. I am the queen of the dumb questions. All right? Let's just get them out there and talk about them and figure it out. Okay? That kind of gives you a little bit of an overview of Kanapa Center. Any questions about Kanapa Center, FPMT, any of that stuff? Okay. How am I doing? I'm doing okay. Time just blows by on me. Okay. Let's do just a brief overview of the Buddha and who the Buddha is. All right? Shakyamuni Buddha, his story really helps us to understand kind of the origins of this spiritual practice, and it gives a little bit of historical perspective to some things, and it also provides an opportunity to kind of reflect on some things. And what do we believe? Okay, what do we believe? What do you believe? What do you believe? This is, you know, this is part of this whole Buddhist quest, okay? It's about your mind and what you actually think, All right. Where did I come from? Why are these things happening to me? Why do we suffer? What happens when we die? How can I be happy? You know, this is what we do. These are the questions that we ask all the time. And I think that the Buddha's life really starts to exemplify this when we start searching for these. And it can give a little bit of help to start putting some of this stuff in context. Okay, I know there are many, many books, and many of you have probably read that. So I'm going to give a brief synopsis of it, and we can ask questions and talk about it later. But just depending on who wrote the book and what the context of the book were, there's a little bit of variables to this, but the basic core is the same. Okay, Shakyamuni Buddha was born, over 2,500 years ago, to a king, to a wealthy family in India. All right, and his name at that time was Prince Siddhartha. Okay, and he was at the time of his birth, his father, the king, brought in a holy man, okay, a seer, to do a reading over the prince, and this seer said that he's going to be one of two things: he's either going to be a great king, or he's going to be a great holy man. Okay. Well, the king, of course, wanted him to follow in his footsteps and be a king. All right. Now, I'm really simplifying this, okay? Like I said, this is Buddhism in a nutshell. We've got 5 minutes to cover some of this stuff. So, but the king, his dad, really just wanted him to follow in his footsteps. He didn't want him to become a holy man, a monk, anything like that. He wanted him to be a king, follow in, what we do. So he really started from birth to really form and control Prince Siddhartha's life so that he would be going down that path of becoming a king. All right, he sheltered him from everything. He sheltered him from seeing any awful things, any sad things. Okay, even as a child, there are stories that Prince Siddhartha was very compassionate toward people and very loving, and so the king wanted him to be a little bit tougher than that, so anybody that got sick, anybody that got ill had to leave. They weren't allowed to stay in the palace. Okay, anytime that there were flowers wilting, he would cut them. Anytime that there was anything that would be of a negative aspect, he would make it go away. So Prince Siddhartha just lived this perfect, controlled, beautiful life. Okay, he wasn't, the stories are that he wasn't any type of a slacker, that he excelled at everything from all of the athletic things that they had there, that he was very handsome, and very smart, and just excelled at all of his studies. But he never saw anything negative at all. And he grew up in this wonderfully sheltered little perfect bubble. Okay, when he was in his late 20s, he got a couple of his attendants to sneak him out of the castle, out of the palace. And when he took several different trips out, and again, I'm giving you the very condensed version. Okay, so he took several different trips outside of the palace. And on these trips, he saw what's called the four sights. Okay, the four sights. One of them is a sick person. One was a corpse, one was an old person, and one was a wandering mendicant, a monk. Okay? So as he saw these things, these are things he'd never seen. He'd never seen somebody really sick before. And so he's asking his attendants about that. Well, what is that? So they're trying to explain what illness is, and that this happens to people. Okay? When he came across the old person, he'd never really seen an old person. Because the king had just had anybody that was growing old and becoming arthritic or any of those signs of major aging, they left the palace. So he's asking, and his attendants are talking about, well, that's something that's going to happen to all of us. We are all going to grow old. That's going to happen to everybody. It's going to happen to you. It's going to happen to the people you care about. It's going to happen to everybody that you know. And that was a little surprising. And then he saw a corpse. He saw a dead body. And that really shocked him. He had no clue what that was, and then his attendants had to try to explain death. And I don't know if any of you have ever tried to explain death to anybody, whether a child or a friend. It's a difficult concept for anybody to to take, but somebody that's in their, you know, late 20s that's been sheltered from this, it was really difficult. And then he saw a wandering mendicant, a monk, a holy man, and he had a hard time understanding why, when he saw all of this suffering, why this monk seemed happy. Okay, and he just couldn't quite wrap his mind around it. And so he went back. He went back to his life in the palace and just tried to kind of deal with these things that he'd seen. And he tried to ask about it, and he tried to figure it all out. And he found that his life in the palace and his life being so sheltered and his life having such extremes of wealth, it just wasn't enough for him. And so he left. Okay, he left the palace, he left his father's kingdom, and he went out and he started looking for different teachers, and he started studying with different monks and different teachers, and they say he had several, and he stayed with them for several years, and actually learned almost past them. Okay, that he learned all that they had to offer, and then it just wasn't quite enough. He just wasn't finding what he was looking for, and how does all this suffering make any sense? And so he just finally kept studying with people, and then he came across a group of these five other monks that were saying that, you know what, we have to go to the other extreme. Okay, we have to do asceticism. We have to just, you know, try to subsist on very little, one grain of rice. You know, just a little bit of water, just the very bare essence of what we need to stay alive, because we just have to just let everything in life go and just do the meditation and just focus on this. And he tried this for years. And it at one point they say, I think we've seen some of these pictures and some of those little statues where you see all the ribs and stuff, and you see, you know, when the Buddha went down that path. And they say, the story goes that one day he was by the river and he was just so weak that he couldn't even hardly think anymore. That a boat came by, and there was a person with a stringed instrument in the boat, and this musician was saying, well, in order to play this instrument, the strings can't be too tight and they can't be too loose. They have to be tuned perfectly to make the beautiful noise. And so the Buddha at that point thought that, you know what, I too have to find a middle way. I cannot do this extreme asceticism and just cut everything out because I'm so hungry I can't even think. But I can't go so far the other way as in the palace, because at that point I was so sheltered and there was so much wealth that, you know, I'm not learning anything either. So this is where the middle way came about, just finding that, you know, not too much one way or the other. Let's just go down the middle and try to work this out. And at that point, that's when he left those five monks, and he went out on his own, and he went to sit underneath the Bodhi tree and look at his mind and work with his mind. Okay? And so he literally went and he sat, and he just worked with his mind, and he started to realize that all of the suffering that he had was in his mind. And he just started to see that everything about suffering was in his mind and that he could do something about it. And he started working with it and meditating with it, and he had the all of these different realizations that were coming to him as he was meditating and as he was working on this. And this was not like an overnight thing. This was a long time. This was years. Okay? And then there was one night where just that last bit of negativities and obscurations just seemed to rush in on him, and just, you know, what makes you think you can do this? What makes you think you can reach enlightenment? All of these things that we tend to think too. Why do I think I can do this? Okay, he had them majorly come at him, and it said that when dawn was breaking and he had the last obscuration, that he reached out and touch the earth as if to call the earth to witness, to say, I can do this and I can reach enlightenment. And they say that that's when it actually happened and he became enlightened. You see in some of the pictures here that he's reaching out and touching the ground. Okay, so what does that mean? What does enlightenment mean? What is he talking about there? What enlightenment means, I'm going to kind of cheat and go to a couple of things because I'm getting to something. We have very specific there it is right there. When we talk about things, we're going to give very specific definitions so that we're all on the same page and we know what we mean. Okay, enlightenment from a Buddhist perspective means that it's full awakening, that you have removed all your obscurations, everything negative, and you have fully developed all the virtuous states of mind, all of the positive. That's what we mean when we talk about enlightenment. Okay, this is a very specific definition to this. All right, so the Buddha reached enlightenment, and that's when he became the Buddha. Buddha means enlightened one. That's the definition of the Buddha. I'll flip back to this, I promise. Okay, so that's when Prince Siddhartha became the Buddha, because that means enlightened one. All right, Shakyamuni Buddha, his name, Shakya, he was from the Shakya clan. That was his dad's family. Okay, and Muni means sage. So Shakyamuni Buddha, enlightened one. Okay, so we talked about the four sets. He sat under the Bodhi tree in Bodh Gaya. You can go to Bodh Gaya today, and the Bodhi tree is there. All right, so they've got it all fenced off. Has anybody here been there? Chris has been there? Okay, they take the FPMT will actually take tours and stuff. If you ever get a chance to go, I would love to go, and someday I will. But you can actually go over and you can see all of these holy sites. But the Buddha reached enlightenment. Okay, he got rid of all of the negative states of mind and developed the positive states of mind. Okay, now since the Buddha was a man, he's not a god, he's not a creator, he could not sit there and say, now you're all enlightened, I give you this. So the next best thing is he could teach how he became enlightened. And that's exactly what he started to do. He started to teach. All right. He went back to those five mendicants, those people that he was working with before. And at first they didn't understand what he was trying to say, but as they actually started to work with him a little bit, and then they realized he actually had reached enlightenment, and that's when they decided that he would become their teacher, and they're the ones that helped to start the first schools of Buddhism. The best way I can explain this, an analogy that I have heard that works really, really well for me, is that he's just similar to Sir Isaac Newton, who discovered gravity. Okay, he discovered it. Okay, it was already there. He just named it, right? The apples falling, that whole thing. That's the Buddha. He didn't create Buddhism, okay? He didn't create enlightenment. He discovered it. And then he's going to explain it to us so that we can reach enlightenment too. And that's one of the biggest things about the Galupa tradition that we are in, okay, is that according to this tradition, we all have the ability to reach enlightenment. We all do, each and every single one of us in this room. Okay, we all do. So it's just a question of us figuring it out and studying it ourselves. Okay. Any questions now? Y'all are so quiet. I feel like I've got diarrhea of the mouth. Blah, 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 blah. No questions. Nothing. Nada. Not a bit. Okay. All right. Okay, so we've talked about the Buddha. We figured that out. A couple of definitions. And now let's work on a couple of concepts, okay? So with this and with the Buddha saying that everything is about the mind, that's probably the most important thing. If there's one takeaway tonight, that's it. Okay, Buddhism is about the mind. Everything you see in this room, every one of the banners, every one of these tankas, spiritual pictures up here, every one of these statues, every one of these texts that are up here, everything in this room is about the mind. All right? Everything about Buddhism is about the mind. And I know that sounds kind of funny, but it's all about developing our mind. Many of these things, you can kind of think of each of these of these pictures, and again, this is a description that I've heard that I just love. It's a PowerPoint. All right? From a Western point of view, everything in there has meaning, and it leads us to think of certain things when we understand that meaning. So it is a teaching. Okay? So every single one of these things has some kind of a teaching to it. And once we learn it and once we understand it, then we use it. Okay? And again, we're part of the Mahayana Buddhism. There's different types, and we'll get into that more next time. But in this tradition, there is the understanding and belief that we all can reach enlightenment. Okay? So again, after the Buddha became enlightened, he was really trying to think of what's the best way that I can, you know, share this. What is the best way that I can do it? To benefit others. Again, from a Mahayana tradition, it's about being a benefit to others. We talked about that a little bit in the meditation that we did. And that was the Buddha. And so with this new understanding, he really spent the next 40-something years going around and teaching. His first teaching was at Deer Park in Sarnath, and that's known as, you may have heard the term, the first turning of the wheel. Okay, this was his first major teaching, and that is where he taught the Four Noble Truths. And we're going to get into that in some detail a little bit at the end of class here and much more next time. But, again, I want to do a few terms, too. Okay? So we've done enlightenment. The reason I'm always going to bring in definitions, because especially from a Western point of view, once we start using words, we have different meanings to our words than they do in Tibet and than they do in Sanskrit. Okay, so we have so many different languages involved here in Buddhism. Even Pali is one of the first ones. So we have all of these different languages and all of these translations and all of these interpretations. So it's really important that I'm always going to try to come to the definition for you so that, you know, we're all talking about the same thing. Okay, so the Buddha became a teacher. The first teaching was the turning of the wheel. This was at Sarnath. And it was the Four Noble Truths. Now, the Buddha actually said that he gave, that there are 84,000 teachings. Okay? And, they are basically, the sutras are the historical teachings of the Buddha. Back in that time, they were all learned. Okay? It was an oral tradition. And these teachings were not written down for probably a few hundred years after, his passing. Okay, these up here on the altar, you see these little square boxes. Okay, those are the teachings. Okay, if I pulled those down and opened them up, they'd be long cards with Tibetan written on them. So obviously there's only like two people here at the center that can read that, Geshe-la and Geshe Gelug, or Geshe Sangpo. And I have seen them pull down and read. We here are really studying more of the commentaries. Okay, Geshe-la will walk us through, like Wednesday nights we're doing the Lamrim, the stages of the path. And there's a lot of commentaries that we're reading. That way it helps to explain them, in quite some more detail. Okay, you're gonna hear the word Dharma a lot. Okay, we're studying the Dharma. Does it include the Dharma? You know, what are you thinking about the Dharma? There's two meanings. In Buddhism, a lot of times the best analogy I can give is like an onion where there's all of these different layers as you peel them back. Okay, things can have a lot of different meanings. And Dharma can refer to the actual technical words are that which protects or that which holds. Okay, but the conventional sense, okay, we talk about the Dharma as being the Buddha's teachings. A lot of times we'll say, well, that's Dharma. You know, this is Dharma. Okay, so this is a Dharma book. Okay, so in most of the time, that's the way we're gonna talk about it. But there is an ultimate truth Dharma. Okay, and that's those little realizations that you get when you actually own it, when it actually becomes, oh, see, now that's the Dharma in action, okay? When you actually get that attained realization, okay? So you won't hear it talked about that much, but kind of hang on to that because that's what this is all about, okay? So kind of hang on to that. The ultimate description of Dharma is the realizations that attained along the path to liberation and enlightenment, okay? So, again, it's just going to be kind of working through some of these things. It's time. I'm doing okay. Okay, so Buddhism is about the mind. People have different ideas of what Buddhism is. Okay, many people say Buddhism is a religion. Many people will say that Buddhism is a way of life. Many people will say that Buddhism is a mind science. Okay, and it really can be all of those things. Buddhism is really more what is your definition of it, and you kind of have to work on that yourselves because it can be any of those things or all of those things. The actual technical one that I like to use sometimes, it is following the teachings of the Buddha. That's the simplest, basic, easiest, most straightforward definition of Buddhism. That means following the teachings of Shakyamuni Buddha. Okay? Now, it is about the mind and working with the mind. All right? Go through this just a little bit. Okay? So Buddhism started in India. Okay? And then it spread. It spread, and you can easily go find those maps online because it just kind of went from India into Sri Lanka, into Asia, Southeast Asia, China, Japan, Tibet. It actually came in and out of Tibet a couple of times. We'll talk about some of that. I'm not going to give you a whole chronological listing because there's Buddhist for Dummies has probably one of the best explanations if you want to get into really historical spread and how the dates and things of things happening. Now, all across when it was going through this spread of Buddhism, it kind of went into a lot of different traditions, and a lot of this is more like a socio-geographic variations came, and that's because of the ethnicity of things and just part of the culture because it became absorbed in each of the cultures where it spread. Okay, and we even have some of this going on today with Western Buddhism. And I'm trying to remember what do they call that, Chris? Engaged Buddhism, I think, is the new word here in the West. Okay, so it's the same thing. It's all the same thing. It's all very, very similar. It's just slight variations that are mostly going to come about just from cultural and sociology. The geography of the area will help to define some of it, okay? But all of them are very, very similar. The root teachings are all very similar. There are two main strains of Buddhism, Hinayana and Mahayana, okay? And the difference is really more the Hinayana, it talks more about the individual release from suffering, nirvana, and that talks more to the individual. And the Mahayana talks more to we want to become enlightened in order to benefit all. Okay? But again, the similarities, you have to become enlightened yourself before you're going to be able to benefit anybody else. Okay? So anybody that's on the Mahayana path is also studying the Hinayana path. Okay? It's just like you can't save somebody drowning unless you know how to swim. Okay? So you have to think about it like that. They will sometimes be referred to as the greater vehicle and the lesser vehicle. Most really don't like to use those terms because in the West we tend to think greater and lesser as a little bit more judgmental, and that's really not what that is meant at all. Okay? So you'll find out about those. Again, you can talk about them in a lot more depth. Tibetan Buddhism, okay, is one of the main schools or the main offshoots of Buddhism. And again, most of this is just depending on this group really wanted to get more into the study part, okay? And Tibetan Buddhism is that group, okay? It's more about the actual schooling, okay, and the learning, and the very, very linear. Okay, and again, I'm giving you just the briefest. We're skimming along the top of this stuff really, really high level, okay? There are four major schools of Tibetan Buddhism, and they're all found in the West. We are part of the Gelupa, Kagyu, Nyingma, Gelug. What am I missing? Kagyu, Nyingma, Gelug. There's one more. It'll come to me. These are all in the West. You can find them in the West. Gelug is the Dalai Lama's lineage. Now, the Dalai Lama has been the spiritual leader of all of the Tibetan Buddhism. Okay, he was the political leader, but he just stepped down a few years ago. Okay, and now there is a political leader. But even though he was in the Galupa school, he has been the spiritual advisor and the spiritual leader of all of the schools. Okay, we just happen to be, the Kadapa Center is a Galupa school. Okay, and our teacher, Geshe Gelug Choda, who went to Sarah J. Monastery, that all falls under the Dalai Lama's lineage. We've already talked about Lama Yeshe, Lama Zopa Rinpoche. Now, Lama Yeshe passed away a few years ago, but Lama Zopa Rinpoche, he was actually just here. Okay, that's the gentleman to the right of the Dalai Lama as you're facing him, and he was actually just here teaching just last month. He travels the world. He's over in Italy right now, and he's phenomenal. And these people are amazing. I just cannot explain to you enough. If you ever get a chance to be around any of these sangha, and you were talking about when you came to the San Mandala, you can. It's amazing when you get a chance to, like I said, come see Geshe-la on Sunday, and you'll know what I'm talking about. We've already done this. We've already talked about this. So let's go to the Four Noble Truths. Okay? And again, Buddhism is about the mind. Everything is about the mind. We are developing the positive states of mind that lead to happiness. We're removing the negative states of mind that cause suffering. That's actually what enlightenment is. Okay? And the mind, we're going to get to that in a minute. Let's stop there. I want to go over here. The first teaching. Okay, I got about 10 minutes. Okay, we're going to just start this, and then we'll pick this up. This will be part of what we talk about next time. Okay, in more depth. The Four Noble Truths is the first teaching of the Buddha. Okay, this is the first turning of the wheel. And you guys have all heard this, right? The first noble truth, the truth of suffering. Second noble truth, the truth of the cause of suffering. Third noble truth, the truth of cessation of suffering. The fourth noble truth, the truth of the path to the cessation of suffering. Here's where everybody gets the wrong idea about Buddhism, from my opinion. Okay? Everybody always says, oh, those Buddhists, all they talk about is suffering. It's always so negative. It's always such a downer. Okay, I've actually heard that. And after you study this and after you see it, I have been in this for a long, long time, and actually the Buddhists that I know are some of the most joyful, some of the most peaceful, some of the happiest people that I have ever met. And I want that. That's why I'm here, because I see it. All right? They are not all about the suffering. We talk about suffering so that we can get rid of it. Okay? It's just like going to the doctor. Okay? You're sick. Okay? You've got something wrong. There is suffering. It's that simple. Okay? You then need to have the truth of the cause of suffering. We need to diagnose it. What is wrong? What is it? Let's identify it. Okay? Once we identify it, well, guess what? There's something we can do about it. Okay, we can take a medicine, we can have an operation, we can do something about it, and then it's the actual doing it. It's that simple, okay? It will go into this in a lot more detail, but it's that simple, okay? Now we have to understand, we're going to go into a lot more explanation of the terminology of suffering and what we really mean, okay? Because when we think of suffering, we think of cancer, we think of death, we think of, you know, pain, okay, that's suffering, okay, but there are many other types of suffering. And so from a, again, I'm going to get into the definitions. The Sanskrit word is actually dukkha, and that's, sometimes I like to bring some of those in so it gets us off of our little Western, you know, you hear suffering, you're going to automatically think this, and we need to expand that knowledge so that you have a little bit better understanding of what we're talking about. And we're saying we can get rid of some things. You're smiling. Did I say something wrong? Yeah? Did I get it right? Okay. So, see, now I got to be careful. So, but you know what I'm saying then. You have a better idea of what I'm saying because there's so much more meaning to that word. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, that was really good. So did everybody hear her? She was talking about what suffering was, and that Geshe-la had given the example about not finding your favorite cup in the morning. And so you start making up these stories in your head, and you start worrying about, well, who took my cup? Where's my cup? That's my favorite cup. I like that cup. Where did that cup go? And now, so you kind of sit there with that, and that is part of what we're calling is suffering. That's suffering too. That mental, you know, anytime your mind is not on a virtuous, and we say virtuous, it doesn't mean you're off in la-la land happy all the time too. Happiness can be a very, very quiet thing, okay? But all of these little things, impatience. One of the things back, I still remember back in the day when I was working on all of this many, many years ago. And I was like, I don't think of myself as an angry person. So I actually wasn't even listening that well. I'm not angry. I don't need that part. I don't need to listen to that. So I was like reading ahead and doing all of this stuff, and I really didn't pay too much attention. Even in the books I was reading, oh, it's anger. I don't need that. I'm not angry. And then all of a sudden you start getting the definitions. And you start learning, and you start opening your mind a little bit more, and it came out, I remember to this day, all of a sudden this book where they were talking about different forms of anger and impatience. Okay, impatience is a form of anger. I never really put those two things together. So being impatient is a form of anger. And it's like, well, I guess I can be impatient sometimes. And all of a sudden, that became a big thing to me. And all of a sudden, I was, all of the times that I wasn't patient, okay, just even driving, okay, when you're trying to get someplace and somebody cuts you off, and it's, you're frustrated. Frustration and impatience. I actually, this is part of my practice now, because once you start having these awarenesses, and once you start watching your mind, okay, and again, I'm kind of jumping off track here a little bit, but it is a phenomenal practice, okay, and once you start watching your mind, you start paying attention. Just last week, I've been doing this for a long time now, and I try to meditate, I try to work with this stuff, but you have to remember, it's kind of like you're a mechanic working on a car racing down the freeway, because you're using your mind to work on your mind. Just last week, I was having a bad day. Things were not going right, one thing after another, and all of a sudden, it was like, I always have this thing, oh, it's the opportunity to practice patience. I was trying to say it without facetiousness. Opportunity to practice, not, oh, it's the opportunity to practice. So I was just a little bit frustrated, and all of a sudden I heard myself think, I don't have time to practice patience right now. I stopped dead in my tracks. I heard it. I heard myself think it. I don't have time right now. I don't have time to practice patience. I just gasped. I mean, I was in my office. I was, and then I heard it, and I sat down, and I laughed till I cried, because that was my mind. I don't have time to practice patience. What? Yeah. So once you start working with your mind, that's what this is all about, being able to catch your mind doing these things, being able to catch your mind and work on these things, being able to, when you open up that cupboard and your coffee cup isn't there, not get all caught up in where is it, who took it, what went wrong. It's all these little things, but understand, if you can let all these little things go, how much happier are you going to be? It's not that hard. We say it. It's not hard, but it's very hard. But that's the practice. Is this making sense? Okay, how much time? I'm going to lose track once I start getting into this stuff. Okay, so we're going to go into that in much, much more detail next time. And we're going to actually break it down. We're going to break it down as to what it means, how do we use this, what actually can we do with this, and kind of move on a little bit from there. But the truth of suffering, I mean, just literally, just admit you're sick. The causes, we've got to determine what's causing it, all right? And then once we figure out what's causing it, then we can figure out what to do about it, if it can be cured, and then we get a course of treatment. I mean, it's really, those are the analogies that we're going to work on. I think that's about it. Let's do one just very brief meditation. Does anybody have any questions about any of this so far? You guys are quiet. You're going to have to come with some more questions next time. Okay, let's just do a very, very brief. Again, this is going to be, let's do another kind of concentration meditation. And just to kind of set the tone a little bit, okay? So again, get yourself a little bit in that position that we talked about, that 7-point meditation posture. And think about your feet and your legs, you know, have them grounded on the floor. You want your back to be straight and your shoulders back a little bit, your arms a little bit out, and your hands, your right hand resting on your left. And you want your head slightly tilted and your jaw and your mouth relaxed, your tongue behind your teeth on the roof of your mouth, and your eyes can be closed or just slightly open. Okay, this meditation is called Scanning the Body. So first, focus your attention on your breathing and just breathe naturally. Become present in the moment and place where you are, and just focus the mind on the rising and falling of your shoulders and chest as you inhale and exhale gently. Allow your mind to settle and become calm, present, and ready to engage. Just as we talked about, the first thing we're going to do is we're going to create an altruistic motivation for the meditation session. So think that you're meditating not just for your own individual benefit, but you're taking the time now to meditate and develop your mind to become a wiser and kinder person, able to be a benefit to all beings. Focus your attention on your physical body. Find the most suitable position for meditation with your spine straight. Okay, you don't want it to be rigid. Now focus your attention on the lowermost point of your body, where your body is in contact with the earth, or the chair, the ground, the cushion that you're sitting on. And feel the substance and earthy character of your body down there. Concentrate for a moment on that contact, on the weight and substance of this physical form. And pay attention to the character of your mind and your consciousness while focusing here. Now slowly and mindfully move your attention upward through your body. Pay close attention to every aspect of your body and your physical sensations. Note the areas of tension and relax them. Note any sensations of coolness or warmth. Note places where one part of your body is touching another. Move upward through your legs, your hips, your hands, and your lap. Note the curves of your body's silhouette. Move upwards your belly, your waist, curves of your arms. Continue to move upward the rising and falling of your chest with your breathing and the curves of your shoulders. Keep moving upward slowly and mindfully. Pay special attention to your shoulders and your neck and jaw. If there's tension there, relax those areas. Move still upward at the tilt of your head until you reach the crown of your head. Allow your attention to rest at your crown for just a moment. And pay attention to the character of your mind, your consciousness, while focusing there. Is your mind's character different while concentrating here than it was when you were focusing on the lowermost point of your body? What differences do you notice? Now slowly move your attention back downward through your body in the same way. So just move slowly, mindfully, noting everything about your body as you move your attention back down. Bring your attention all the way back down to the cushion or floor where your body is at contact with the earth. Again, focus your concentration at this point and note the character of your consciousness while focusing here. Again, note the nature of your mind state when concentrating here, and note any differences from your mind state when concentrating at your crown. Okay, finally, dedicate your positive energy and insights to the well-being and happiness of all living beings. Bring your attention back to the room. Now, did anybody notice any difference in their mind from when you were concentrating up here or is concentrating down? I've had some people say that their mind felt a little bit lighter. You guys are not going to talk at all, are you? Zero, nothing, nada. Okay, I'll let you off the hook. Like I said, these handouts are all online. Again, this was literally a concentration meditation to kind of get us ready to start to do some analytical. Okay, there's different things that we can talk about with meditation and with some different things that we'll be doing. Many of you may be meditating. Let's just talk about that for just a second. Again, from a Tibetan Buddhist perspective, we use meditation to work with our mind. We don't do it for stress relief, and we don't do it for relaxation. Those are byproducts. Those are going to happen when we do this. It's amazing, but that's what happens. Those are byproducts. They are going to happen. If you concentrate and you do these things, you become less stressed. You become more relaxed. You're able to control it much better. I know that there's a lot of mindfulness meditation, a lot of things going on, and that's great. I've just found from a personal perspective that when I do this, that happens. For whatever reason, when I've tried to do that, I don't get anywhere. But this works for me. So you might want to think about it that way. And again, whatever meditations and things and techniques that you're using, give these a shot. You can, give it a real shot. You know, I think Westerners, we tend to try something, doesn't work, moving on. This is about being honest with yourself. This, you don't have to prove anything to me. You don't have to prove anything to anybody else. It's all about you. It is almost 8:30, I will always try to start on time, and I will always try to end on time. My email is up there, membership@kadampacenter.org. I wear several different hats here, as do we all, because we're mostly a volunteer organization. But if you have any questions, I'll do my best to answer them. If I can't, I will certainly know who can. So feel free at any time during the course or even afterwards, hang on to that, and I'll try to help with whatever I can. Next week we're going to go into a lot more details of the Four Noble Truths. We'll try a couple of more easy meditations. This is kind of just that introductory meditation 101. You'll go into this a lot deeper, and as well as some of the others. There's a lot of things that this is just a little teaser course. And if you've got any questions, let me know. But next time we'll go a little bit deeper into the actual teachings of the Buddha and how to break some of them down. Okay, thanks so much. And I hope you didn't get too bored. And you didn't ask any questions, so I just talked.